One of the Hollywood greats left us in March of this year. Elizabeth Taylor, the world's most beautiful woman. Of course, you know Liz won 2 Oscars for Best Actress, for Butterfield 8 and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. But in fact, Liz had 3 fairly distinct career personas. As the child star of movies like National Velvet, as temptress in movies like Cat on the Hot Tin Roof, and as an older Hollywood grande dame, AIDS activist and friend to pop stars like Elton John and Michael Jackson. And then there were her 7 husbands and 8 marriages. There's a lot of story there. My guest today, Ellis Amburn, has just updated his acclaimed biography, The Most Beautiful Woman in the World, The Obsessions, Passions, and Courage of Elizabeth Taylor. The book is a candid retelling of a life that was absolutely cinematic in scope. Ellis worked as a reporter-researcher at Newsweek before becoming an editor at Putnam, then at Delacorte and at Morrow. He's edited Kerouac, John le Carré, and Edward Albee. He's collaborated on books by Shelley Winters, Sammy Davis Jr., Lana Wood, and Priscilla Presley. Ellis has also authored books on Roy Orbison, Janis Joplin, Buddy Holly, and Jack Kerouac. Welcome, Ellis. I have to say, I really enjoyed the book. It's a great read. You just don't want to put it down.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
Okay, you have to ask, how and when did you become interested in Elizabeth Taylor?
As a child, I fell in love with her when I saw her in Lassie Come Home. So I followed her career for years. Then I met her in Las Vegas around 59 or 60. When I was standing next to her in a casino, and she just started talking, though we'd never met, because the famous know that somebody is always listening, so they often just burst out with something. And then I was standing next to her at a party for Brooke Shields after the opening of Endless Love in New York, and she was looking at Brooke, who was standing near us, and she said, "Humph, so that's my competition." And of course, Elizabeth at the time, you know, was far past her peak as a beauty, and Brooke was just coming into hers. So but I'd always been fascinated with her, and then I guess it was around 1998, I went out and lived in L.A. for a while and interviewed her friends because I'd always wanted to write about her.
Hmm. Well, really, how did you get started collecting all the material? Because the book is so incredibly detailed.
I went to see my friend Jack Larson, who played Jimmy Olsen on the original TV Superman, and who had known Elizabeth for years, and was very close to Montgomery Clift. So what he didn't learn from Elizabeth, he learned from Monty over the years. And so he was a wonderful source of information. And he's a wonderful guy. He's still alive and living in L.A.
Hmm. Well, I read in the book that you had one very special dinner with Elizabeth that included Calvin Klein and Andy Warhol and Halston. Tell us a little about that.
Yes. That was when she was trying to help John Warner, now a senator, to become a senator. And he, you know, a lot of us make mistakes in our midlife and senior years by getting involved with younger people. And she made a couple of bad choices, and he was one of them, because he had earlier hit on Barbara Walters and told her, a woman like you could probably help me get elected senator. So Elizabeth was putting a lot of energy into John Warner, which is tragic because they're poles apart politically.
All right. Well, since you brought it up first, let's talk about those marriages. Nikki Hilton, Michael Wilding, Mike Todd, Eddie Fisher, Richard Burton, again, Larry Warner, Larry Fortensky. So tell us, you know, some people think that I've heard it said that Elizabeth Taylor never had intimate relations with anyone until she was married. So share some insider scoop on that.
Well, Vic Damone, she and Vic Damone, who were both at Metro in the 40s, they had an affair, and she was a teenager, and she was so possessive that when he dumped her, she got Louis B. Mayer because she was worth a million times more than Vic Damone to Metro, and she got Louis B. Mayer. She pulled a sit-down strike on her picture and told the head of Metro that he was going to need to fire Vic Damone unless he took her to dinner.
Huh.
And the choices that she made for husbands were all wrong. Nikki Hilton beat her up and, as she put it, kicked a baby out of her stomach on their honeymoon.
Huh.
So he was nuts. Michael Wilding was unemployable, and she was very expensive wife to have, insisting on jewelry and maids and everything. And they really didn't make that much money in those days. The standards of today's wealth. I think she was getting about $150,000 a year and had to have nurses and nannies for the three children she had with Michael Wilding. Mike Todd, she's lucky that the marriage only lasted 440 days before his death, because Joan Blondell years later told me that he was so violent that he dangled her from a high story of the Waldorf Astoria by her ankles during a fight. Then let's see who was next. Eddie Fisher, drug addict, hopeless. Then she married Richard Burton twice. He, by his own admission, was a little bit gay and hated what he did. He absolutely despised, he was ashamed to be an actor and wanted to be a teacher and a writer. So he was a very miserable man. Then she married a caterpillar dirt compactor. Well, at first there was John Warner, who we've already talked about. Then there was Larry Fortinsky,
right,
a construction worker, who was, an alcoholic hanger-on who she met in rehab, violating every rule of rehab. You're not supposed to have sex for a year when you're trying to get sober.
So, I mean, of these men, which would have been the love of her life? Richard Burton, or was there someone else that she didn't actually marry who would get that title?
Montgomery Clift, who was gay, was the love of her life. She went to gays for love. She went to straight men for sex, and that's probably why it never worked out. She and Monty were close friends for life. Of the men she married, she always said that she loved Mike Todd passionately, and then she never speaks of Richard Burton with anything but the deepest love, though he once called her a low, scurrilous creature. But, you know, they were drunks, and that's what alcoholics do, is abuse each other. But in its own way, I guess it was a great love story. Certainly it was to her.
Actually, I read something in your book that I had never heard, that Elizabeth's father, an art dealer, was also suspected to be homosexual.
Yes, he had a love affair with a costume designer named Adrian and a great businesswoman. It's just mind-boggling what she accomplished, considering the weight of pain and misery that she carried, which Shirley MacLaine ended up doing. Elizabeth was always enabling the men in her life. At that point, she was trying to make an international star out of Richard Burton, who'd never made it in America. He'd been in The Rogue and other movies, but he'd never become a box office champ the way she was. That's one reason he married her. And so she made movie after movie with Richard Burton, and on screen, married couples have absolutely no chemistry. There's not a single thing they did together except for, and they made seven or eight movies together. There was one good one, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? But she should have been working with people who wanted to work with her at that point, like Paul Newman.
When Liz was at the height of her movie career, did she actually have starlet friends, or were actresses afraid she'd steal their man?
what a good question. And she, like most alcoholic women, had few girlfriends. She could have used them. She could have used a psychiatrist and girlfriends. So she was always going to men to fix her unhappiness. And, of course, we can only fix our own unhappiness.
Yeah.
But some girlfriends would certainly have been a great asset in Elizabeth's, people she could talk with no agenda, and people who had no agenda.
Yeah. Well, in all her film roles, was there one role that she most closely identified with or felt proudest of? I know she won 2 Oscars for Best Actress, but which was her favorite?
Well, one she hated, which I loved, by the way, was Gloria Wandress, the prostitute in Butterfield 8. The one she loved, she loved playing Martha in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, because it was exactly the way Martha and George tore into each other alcoholically was exactly the nature of her marriage with Richard Burton. So all they had to do in that was play themselves. She loved the role she worked so hard to get, Leslie in Giant, who was the first liberated woman in the movies. That was about 1955. It's a wonderful role. Jennifer Jones tried to get it. Grace Kelly wanted it. Audrey Hepburn was up for it. And Elizabeth got it because Rock Hudson, who was the hottest new star in the world at the time, told George Stevens he wanted to work with Elizabeth Taylor. And I think that's one reason Elizabeth remained his friend all those years, and including when he was in disgrace, when he was dying of AIDS, when that was still thought of as a disgrace. She stood by Rock Hudson right to the end, bless her heart.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, on to my favorite topic, the jewelry. Where and when did she get started with that collection, and what's happened to it, actually?
Well, her mother gave her a pretty little, I think it was a necklace, or it might have been a brooch, and it didn't have any precious gems in it, but it meant a lot to Elizabeth, and so she then found, with her great beauty, that when she asked a man for a $30,000 tiara, as she did a Mike Todd, she would get it. And so that became a habit with her, and she put together this great collection, which will be sold in December at Christie's. But the most hideous piece of jewelry in the collection, Michael Jackson gave to her. It's a monkey necklace, and it is priceless. I've never seen so many diamonds in my life, but it is ridiculous and ugly.
Well, talk a little about that relationship. It's a little strange, so give us some insight on that relationship.
Yes, Michael Jackson, as a drug addict, was helpless, as all are. He needed someone to run his life because he had no judgment, and was always loaded. So Elizabeth Taylor stepped in, and in a lot of those trials for child molestation and so forth, it was Elizabeth who was running a team of 8 lawyers, and she also smuggled him to England to a rehab when he was afraid of being arrested at one point.
How did they meet? How did they meet, actually?
He showed up at her door with his monkey.
Ellis, tell us about your next project.
My next project, at last, after writing 12 books about other people, Kim Novak, Shelley Winters, Peggy Lee, it's time to write about Ellis Ambern the same way I wrote about them.
Well, I have to say, after reading your book, The Most Beautiful Woman in the World, you are one of a writer.
Well, thank you. I believe I'll call it The Life That Late He Led.
All right, Ellis, we'll look for it. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Elaine. It was all kinds of fun.
All right.